And we're joined in the studio by Phil Haywood, who is a fantastic fingerstyle guitar player. And he is up here for this weekend for a concert tomorrow night and primarily for a workshop that's going on at Bluefin Bay tomorrow, where people who want to learn more about learning all of the intricacies of fingerstyle playing and all the things that go with it can hopefully pick up a thing or two, if not by watching, by hearing what some of these guys have to say. So you're here with Gordon Thorne, who's a local player.
Yeah.
And with Steve Call.
Steve Call.
And one of the things that we're doing, there are three different parts to the workshops tomorrow. Can you explain what those different parts are?
Well, we're each doing one, a separate one. Gordon's kicking it off, and he's going to be focusing on the style of Mississippi John Hurt.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of one of the, you know, the archetypal American fingerstyle guitar players. It's somebody who inspired lots of people.
Yeah. A lot of really incredible licks and turnarounds and just the groove feel.
Yeah, the thing about Hurt that is so attractive for me anyway is he just has this relentless rhythm and a really warm tone. And, actually you mentioned licks, but, you know, he's really a songster, or was really a songster. And the licks were, he was a country blues player, but you don't hear him wigging out all over the fretboard. He just has this really warm, steady rhythm and a great thumb.
Yeah. Well, and in some respects, too, Leadbelly, you say, is one of your other great influences. He's
one of the first, yeah.
Kind of the same, too. I mean, people don't look at him as a spectacular guitar player necessarily, but as somebody who wrote and played incredible music and songs.
Yeah, and had such a sound.
Yeah.
I mean, he had one of those old Stella 12 strings tuned way down, like, you know, 2.5 steps below normal or something like that, with gigantic strings on them. And he just had such a sound.
Some rumble.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the thumb thing is really important. I was actually talking to Buck earlier about how what separates people who are really good guitar players from the rest of us in the world is the separation of being able to play a separate rhythm and or pattern with thumb and fingers.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's really, whether you're a classical player or a folk finger picker, That's kind of the key, getting that independence of finger motion, and it takes a long time.
Yeah, it does. Well, I either didn't have the patience or the talent, because I'm, you know, there's certain things I can do, but that's not really one of them all that well. So your thumb, I just was looking at your thumb as you walked into the studio. I mean, that's a fairly developed set of muscles there.
I mean, I'm not aware of it as such, but to other people, I suppose.
Well, everybody has their hazards of their occupation. So you've been playing a long time, and you've had some pretty incredible kudos over time. You were actually national fingerpicking champion at one time.
Well, I was, yeah. That's a title I sometimes feel a little apprehensive about, because, people hear that, and they think you're going to come out with all this razzmatazz, and frankly, I'm not that fond of razzmatazz.
Yeah.
I'm more in Mississippi John Hurt school with that kind of a title, you're worried that people expect you to come out and do some kind of guitar version of Orange Blossom Special or Foggy Mountain Breakdown or something like that.
Something and flashy.
Or everybody's going to be gunning for you.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, there's some pretty famous people that have had that title, but you've been playing an awful long time, and you still love it, obviously.
I do.
And so, you know, obviously loving it helps a lot, but what is it that kind of keeps you coming back and keep playing all the time?
Well, you know, that sort of changed over the years. I would say the performing part of it now is a lot bigger for me than it was when I was younger. I used to think, you know, that it was more pure to just be totally into the music, playing the guitar. Kind of a guitar hermit kind of guy. as long as I had at least one friend as a sounding board to bounce things off and to, you know, I'm going to play this, I'm going to show this to Pat or Joe or whoever, you know.
Yeah.
But more in the last part of my playing. The performance is really where things happen, I think. You know, when you have an audience and songs take shape in a way that they don't always when you're just sitting around by yourself. It's kind of a mystery.
Yeah.
But I really...
There's some magic there,
yeah,
and some interaction that goes on that's kind of hard to describe.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you let our audience have a little magic and mystery, and if you'd like to play something for us, that'd be lovely.
Yeah, well, we've talked about John Hurt. Why don't I play one of his pieces? Though I'm not someone who does things, you know, note for note. I was talking with Gordon about this just the other night, how John Hurt is frequently someone that people hear and get inspired by early on. And so they go after the tunes and they learn them in a way that they think sounds pretty close to what the guy's doing. But, you know, we're learning them at a young, relatively young age when maybe our ear isn't all that tuned in to everything that's happening. So you learn something and you play it, and then you drop the original record and you just keep playing it, and it evolves into something that's more or less your own, which is a great thing. And then you go back 20 years later and listen to the original John Hurt thing, and you hear all kinds of stuff that you didn't hear in those early years.
I think that's called interpretation.
Well, that's part of what makes interpretation, yes. So anyway, I don't profess to be playing John Hurt note for note. I don't do that. This is one of his famous tunes, though. I certainly one of a lot of people's favorites of his. It's called Candyman, and I'm just going to do it as an instrumental.
Yeah.
Wow, there's a lot happening in that guitar, Phil.
Yeah.
I'd swear there's somebody living in that thing.
Well, yeah.
Yeah,
it really does have
great.
A life.
That's some independence of thumb and fingers. Speaking of thumb and fingers, Phil's playing with just bare fingers and fingernails. And some guitar players use finger picks. Some people use a plectrum or a regular pick.
Yeah.
And you're just using your raw fingers. And you've got to wear out your nails.
Well, the nails do get worn out. I'm blessed with pretty good nails, though they, you know, every gig, particularly the index finger, gets worn down. And they do break and crack. And I try to patch them as best I can. But I never have gotten into the acrylic nails that a lot of finger pickers use. And, you know, they're a pretty good alternative if you don't have good nails. Or I mean, one thing about this kind of music is that people come at it from so many different angles, different sounds. Certainly someone who's playing with finger picks is going to sound different than I do. And then there are some people who don't use nails at all. You know, they cut their nails short and just use flesh, you know, the flesh, and they have
that's pretty much what
again,
I do.
A whole other tonal palette. For me, the nails and the skin combination is really where it's at for me. I mean, I play with my right hand position quite a bit so that I'm getting different combination of nail and flesh.
Well, your hand position is actually very technically classical. You know, well, your body position isn't, but your
yeah, my body position. I've got, you know, my posture.
Andres Segovia
my posture
would not
is
be proud.
Terrible. Well, sometimes my hand might take a classical look. Other times, it's much more of sort of the country bluesman's look, which is a hand that's like almost parallel, lined up with the strings
and the pinky
so
post.
So you've got a lot of dampening, string dampening capability, and playing with the flesh of your thumb. And then John Hurt would be down like that. In that last song, I wasn't doing strictly a John Hurt right hand, that's for sure.
So for those of you that don't know, string dampening is something that you're doing to keep the notes from ringing, and you're actually putting your palm right over the bridge of the guitar, so you're stopping the strings from vibrating, so you get a muted sound.
Yeah, it's kind of another sort of classic American guitar sound. I mean, you hear that a lot.
A little more of a thump instead of a ring.
Yeah.
You interpret a lot of other people's music, and you do write some of your own original things too. But one of the things that impressed me when I heard your CDs first was that you take a classic like Summertime, for example, you know, Summertime and Living is Easy, and make it entirely your own. It's your deal. You know, the tune's recognizable, it's beautiful, it's melodic, you know, the original composer would be proud, but it's definitely Phil's. So how do you go about taking something that is ubiquitous, it's part of the American songbook, and say, I'm gonna put my label?
Well, usually there's some sort of kernel of inspiration for it. In the case of Summertime, I think I was inspired by a bar band in Bozeman, Montana that I heard, you know, 3 decades ago. And sometimes it's just your way of doing it, and there's no way around it. You know, you just I have a particular way of going after things. I don't have a real fancy jazz chord approach, which someone else might use on a tune like Summertime. Mine's more straightforward folk blues kind of thing.
Play it for what it is.
Yeah.
So your list of influence, you got Blind Willie McTell, you got Mississippi John Hurt, you've got Snaker Dave Ray, you've got Big Bill Brunzi, Blind Willie McTell, I already said that, Lead Belly, Phil Haywood?
Leo Kottke.
Oh, come on. Don't you, no stage name anywhere in there? No, you know, Blinding Phil?
Oh, yeah. Well.
Lightning Hopkins.
I did it for a while.
Haywood.
When I first started playing, I was a pretty shy guy, and I was living out in Wyoming, of all places. And so my first public performing was done in a little bar in a town in Wyoming with a friend who wanted someone to play with him while he sang. And locally out there, I did become known as Fast Fingers Phil.
Ooh. There's one now.
Yeah,
put it out there.
That's not one I'm sort of glad that didn't stick.
Well, being who you really are is probably more important anyway. Recently, in one of your more recent CDs, you did a couple of tribute tunes to John Fahey, and I remember back when I was pretty young and I heard Leo Kottke's 6 and 12 string guitar, there was mm-hmm. a review of it, and they said that, you know, John Fahey has cloned himself and added a third arm.
The third arm, it's just, yes.
And I thought, oh, who's this John Fahey guy? You know, I was young enough that I wasn't around at that time, and so I started digging around and trying to find out who John Fahey is, and I finally found some of his stuff and uh-huh. listened to it. My brother actually had been listening to it, and really incredible driving, just playing the heck out of a guitar and having a good time doing it, and pretty neat guy.
Yeah, those two guys were both really early influences for me. Yeah, those early Tacoma records that Fahey put out are—they're really you know, big landmarks for yeah. solo fingerstyle players. You know, you have the old country blues guys from the 20s and 30s who recorded in those days and then kind of disappeared from sight until the 60s when the folk boom happened, and then when Fahey and Kottke and some others hit the scene, solo acoustic guitar was kind of reborn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of a sudden there were a bunch of people out there doing it, Robbie Basho and mm-hmm. some different guys like that.
Yeah.
And I still remember the first time that I heard 6 and 12 string guitar, and I just went, whoa.
Yeah, that was a total knockout when I first heard that too in 1970, I guess, or somewhere in the early 70s. And it was a very mysterious album in some ways because there was no photo of Leo and these really oddball notes written on the back that, of course, were Leo's own notes. And the playing was just like something you'd never heard before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of the differences about the way you play is that it seems human. It seems real. It seems like, okay, I can see that one person is actually doing all of that, and it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Whereas Leo Kottke seemed sort of otherworldly and in some ways, and mm-hmm. until you realize he was playing a 12-string guitar and doing all kinds of things.
Yeah, and he played incredibly fast in the early days.
Yeah, yeah. And that hurt his hands quite mm-hmm. a lot.
Yeah.
He still plays very beautifully, but a little slower.
He had to change his approach a bit, yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'd like to hear a little more beautiful music from your hands.
Yeah, let me see what I want to do now. Let's see. Thank you.
Lovely. That's amazing.
Yeah,
you really can do that.
Well, that's called Coming In on a Wing and a Prayer. It's actually a tune written by a guy named Jimmy McHugh. I believe, you know, it's kind of a World War II kind of a gospel combined with fighter bomber. but the style that I'm playing in really comes from this great guitarist from the Bahamas, Joseph Spence.
Yeah, I saw that name on your website, and I didn't recognize it.
Well, he's not, you know, maybe not quite the household name of people like Lead Belly and John Hurt, but he's a very idiosyncratic and influential guy. He's also no longer alive, but people like Ry Cooder, Taj Mahal. I think particularly of Ry Cooder, who probably trained his thumb on some Joseph Spence material. Yeah.
Well, I want to hear you play one more tune, but I do have one more question I want to get in before we finish this up.
Sure.
Have you owned more dogs or guitars? Because you're a dog guy.
Guitars are still ahead of the dogs. Thank goodness.
And they both play a big part in your life.
Yeah. I won't go into the dogs. I do sing a little bit, so maybe I should sing something here.
Yeah, if you're feeling up to it, that'd be great.
This is actually, I don't write lyrics, so this is a Mark Knopfler tune. So it's a little change of direction here. It's not a country blues influence type of thing. Something he put on that album he did with Emmylou Harris, and the song is called Rolling Along. Sawdust in these clothes for a blue moon and a red nose. The boys will put 'em up and tear 'em down. We'll wash away the dirt. Just a glass a day ain't gonna hurt. Pretty soon we'll move on out of town. Them by across the plains, we don't even try to catch the names. It's supper time and their kids are home from school. They draw the shades on their shops while we go checking through the props, putting on the paint to play the fool. Better than we did last night. I'll go shuffle through the aches and pains. Mr. Young at heart, that's what I try to be. They all laugh and cry, they get to feeling better, and that is why. If it was good for you, truly it was good for me. Then we're rolling on, rolling on, feeling better than we did last night. Rolling on, rolling on. It's hard sometimes, but pretty much it's all right.
Very nice.
Yeah, thank you so much, Phil, for coming in.
Thank you.
It's been great.